So Brooke Lang, right? Got it. And Eric Hyatt.
That's correct.
Our very first international guests for all the way from Toronto. So it's very exciting. You are apprentices with the local 47 steam fitter. Apprentices. 46.
Yeah, 46.
I wrote down the wrong number. Okay. 46, not 47. So you're a steam fitter apprentices up in Toronto. You were able to join us. We got connected through NUSH with the Sisterhood of Trades. Super excited to have you guys on. So why don't you guys just kind of kick it off? Tell me a little bit about who you guys are and what you're doing right now.
Perfect. All right. I'm Brooke, like you said. I am a third-year steam fitting welding apprentice with the 46. Right now, I'm in trade school, so I'm in my level two, which is like, you know, we have three levels in an apprenticeship, at least in our trade. I'm not sure if it's the same for all the trades, but so we have our level one, which is basic, level two, intermediate, level three, advanced. So I've already done level one for welding, and then one and two now for steam fitting.
Correct. I don't know a lot about trade schools or anything like that. To get to these different levels, what does that entail? Is it like graduating each level? Is it a certain amount of time? Is it like marking off different skills that you have to be able to do to be able to get to the next levels?
The way that works for us is you have, what is it, 1,700 hours?
Yeah, 1,700 working hours.
Yeah, 1,700 hours a year. Times 5 years. So I think it works out to 9,000 hours.
Yeah, 9,000 hours total.
Yeah. And then you also have to pass each level of trade school with a 70% or higher.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. So the test that you guys had to do today, was that one of these, the tests for a certain level or certain skill set?
It's just like every week, every Friday we have a test.
Every Friday.
Our blocks are only 8 weeks long. So we have an 8 week block. We have a test every Friday. And then the last week we have exams for, I think exams this year is only math drafting, which is blueprint reading or not even blueprint reading. It's blueprints, making blueprints.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then literally our final exam. Blueprints. It's crazy.
That would actually, I feel like that would interest me a lot. That one, do you guys like that one or?
Like, I enjoy it, but like at the same time, it's really painful.
Is it just meticulous?
Yes.
Very.
You can't have eraser marks on your paper. Yeah. Like you have to get it right. Like the first time.
And that makes me think,
start over.
The only experience I ever had with that was like when I did a shop class back in middle school and we had to learn how to do pretty much like, you know, like an architecture drawing.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was the same thing. He was telling us kind of, obviously he didn't care with us. We were middle schoolers, but he was telling us things like that. Like they have to be pristine and they have to be so accurate.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think I'm going to. But that does sound like it'd be maybe fun if you have that kind of brain for that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's fun when your drawings aren't to scale. When you have like a not to scale drawing, then you can just like, you know, make sure it fits in the page. But when it's to scale and your scale is like 30 seconds.
Yeah. And then you have this big project due at the end of the year and it has to be like to the 30 second or you're losing a mark for every single 30 second that you're off. And you're no eraser marks, nothing. Like we spent last year, I think it was like a total between the two of us is like 12 hours doing one drawing.
And like, give me, like, how big are these drawings? Are we talking like?
Paper, what's the size of the paper? Do you know it? It's like, I think it's like 12 by 24.
Yeah, it's not like a full size blueprint that you're actually drawing.
Yeah,
it's
like this giant, like table size paper.
But it is big. It's like 12 by 24, I'm
and that's
sure.
crazy, too, because that's, like, not a big paper for that many hours to go into
that. Yeah, last year we had to do a four-story building with different heating systems on each floor.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, that was going to be my next question, is what are you guys actually drawing? Like, buildings, or is this, like, piping systems? Or
it's piping systems both. In buildings. We don't, obviously don't have to worry about, like, the HVAC, the electrical, all that stuff, but it is, like, full heating systems in buildings that's down to, like, the trim off the boiler.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I got us on a tangent already. No, but okay. I don't know a lot about trade school, so we'll probably be getting more into that anyways. So you said you're second level right now. Yeah. Okay. Okay, gotcha. And what are you at right now?
I'm also in my second level. I'm in my fourth year of my apprenticeship. Okay. I started that like a few months back. I moved up into that, but I'm also in the second level of my apprenticeship as well.
Okay. So you guys have both done welding and you guys have both, your guys are both in steam fitting right now.
So she is in
welding. I'm a welder.
Gotcha.
I'm just a steam fitter. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So you gotta break it down for me. What is the difference? Like, I understand there's a big difference there because yeah. you guys are doing very, very different things. But yes. what would be the difference between, because I know when we were talking before this, you are currently getting like fab shop experience. Is that?
Yes. So okay. before I went to trade school, I was working in the shop at my company.
Gotcha.
So I was okay. working with the Heidmeck machines. Shout out Tony Little. I love Tony. He's so cool.
Shout out Tony.
Yeah. But I was like troubleshooting the machine one day and I just messaged him and I was like, hey, help me. Like, please. That's why I love my LinkedIn network. Yeah. I know I can message any yeah, of them and just be like, please help me. But yeah, it's been really cool because I hadn't worked in like a fab shop before. I've always been on site. Mm-hmm. So just working with those really like big machines and kind of seeing how they operate and seeing mm-hmm. how the behind the scenes of everything operates yeah. has been really cool.
And what kind of machines are we talking about? Because I feel like large scale fab shop machines would be scary.
Yeah, they are. There's one. Do you remember what that one was called?
No, I don't remember now.
Yeah.
I've also never worked in a fab shop.
Yeah. This machine is huge.
Yeah.
What were they doing one day? Oh, they were fabricating a bucket for like a bobcat mm-hmm. to plow snow.
Okay.
Just for our shop, yeah. like to plow snow in the back. So they ordered like, was it 36 inch pipe, which is like huge.
Yeah.
Obviously. Imagine yeah. 36 in diameter, but... And they have this big machine that's on rollers and they just set it to like whatever. And the machine does like all the torch cutting and like yeah. rolls it. And I was like, that machine's so scary.
When I walk by a FabTech and see some of those, I'm like, this is terrifying.
Yeah. This thing is huge though. Like it was it had to be like at least like 100 feet long. At yeah. least. That's
well, really and then cool. when you start getting into like, do you guys ever see like beam cutting and things? Like when you're looking at these massive length beams that they're just yeah. like feeding through these machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, do you understand how large of a capacity or room you have to make mm-hmm. something like that happen?
Yeah. Do you also understand the weight capacity that you right? need to have for that? Because
oh, yeah.
like
yeah.
people underestimate how heavy the stuff that we work with actually is.
Yeah, for
like
sure.
even just 6-inch pipe, like anything
oh,
over
crazy.
2-inch
yeah.
pipe in our union, you're not supposed to carry by yourself. No. Do we still do it?
Yes.
Yes. But you're not supposed to.
You're supposed to be asking for help.
Yeah. But sometimes you just don't have time for that.
You know, can't always be waiting around on yeah. someone.
It's a half okay. length of 6-inch. I'll do it myself.
No, don't do that. Also, don't look at me when you talk. Because I can't hear you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay. So we're both in our apprenticeship right now. What are you guys working towards being in these apprenticeships?
I just really want to get my ticket.
Mm, okay,
it's something
and what does
that
mean?
I've been like, once you're done your apprenticeship, you are eligible to write to become a journey person.
Okay. Write your certification.
Yeah, certification.
Of certificate CFQ. Of qualification.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then from there, I want to have my own job site. Like, I want to be a foreman. Mm-hmm. I want to be off the tools. I like working on the tools. I'll do it for however long. It's not a big deal. But I do eventually want to move up into more of a position of power.
And what kind of products do you hope to work on if you were to start like your own shop?
If I were to start my own shop, oh, that's tough. I'd want to do more, get into the more like industrial welding mm-hmm. side and do more like industrial service. That's kind of where I started out, was working in a steel mill, doing service with
oh,
a
wow.
non-union company and like seeing kind of everything that goes into that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I think I'd want to get in. I've always been super big into the industrial side mm-hmm. of the trade. I think it's the coolest thing
yeah.
that I've ever done, really.
Working in a steel mill would be crazy.
Yeah. I have a lot of weird experiences in that place.
We must get into yeah. that.
Like, that is the dirtiest place on the face of the planet.
So, based on the very few amount of videos that have come up online, even on my social media, just because I'm pretty immersed in the steel industry and metal mm-hmm. industry on LinkedIn, even yeah. TikTok sometimes, I find myself there. Steel mill videos
yeah.
are like, in my opinion, the closest thing to hell. Like, they yeah. look terrifying.
That's,
like,
that's
just
actually
a giant, like, molten
yes.
lava.
Yeah.
Metal or yeah. whatever that would be.
There's one story from that steel mill that you worked in. I don't even know if you can share it, but.
What does it entail?
You had to escort people places to do things.
Maybe I can share it.
I don't know. I think
what
you should
if we share it
and then Google
we
it
can.
After.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So.
I like the way
it was,
you think.
Yeah, that's a good point. Once a month, they used to bring, they had a couple cops come every single month and they'd bring all the guns that they confiscated from people, all the guns that were no longer certified
no
for
way.
The police to use. And
to
they'd
melt
literally,
them down.
Yeah, they'd literally mm-hmm. bring them in wheelbarrows and we used to have to escort the cops with also one of the steel mill workers as well. and we'd have to escort them up, and it's like this big plank mm-hmm. that they walk across. Obviously, there's railings on the side or whatever, and then you drop them in those big melting pots. It is like, it is one of the coolest things you'd ever see, actually. That? It's like looking in the top of those pots is like one of the coolest things you'd ever see.
That sounds terrifying to me personally.
It does sound terrifying. It's terrifying. The thought of like falling.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
So I guess it probably depends like where, which ones you work out, whatever. But like, is the safety pretty good at those places?
Like,
because be it honest. Seems like.
Be honest.
Like, no, not really.
Yeah. I just feel like you have to know what you're signing up for to work in a place like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's non-safe.
No. It's like a completely different animal in there. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be. It sucks to work in all seasons because it's really hot in the summer. Course. Those pots are, I don't know how many degrees they get up to. Like
thousands.
Yeah, like thousands for sure. But like if you're out there in the summer and you have to walk into that building, you're like immediately wanting to die.
Yeah.
Just because it's so hot.
Is it even better in the winter?
No, not really.
Because yeah. Like you're, air you go from. Thick.
And the air is also very thick. Like I have pictures, I could try and pull them up after if I still have them, of me leaving there after just like a random day of work there, just completely black.
Yeah, I feel like you'd just be like, black. It's like working in a mine, but like, honestly, it's probably pretty similar other than the fact that it's probably much more hot, but just like the hazards, the risk, the what you're breathing, I would imagine is not good.
No, no. And that's what I mean too. Like there's days where I got, and we obviously have this now too, just depending what job site we're on or whatever. But if you go home and you go in the shower, like I've had days where I went in there and just like the blackness that came like running out of my nose and like the corners of my eyes and like my ears, everything. It was just,
That's gotta be
honestly
bad for
foul.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the days that you're washing your hands like six times before you get in your car.
For
and
sure,
then you like get home and you're washing your hands again and they're still black.
Yeah. All like your exterior clothes gets left like at the door and you just have to like put it in a bag.
Yeah. Yeah. Garbage bag.
Yeah.
Well, he wouldn't even wash. When he worked there, he wouldn't even wash his work clothes at his parents' house. He would take them to a laundromat.
You have to at that point.
Yeah. Cause like,
or get your own separate washer or something.
Yeah.
There's no way your parents
exactly. No, no. The first day I came back, I like had them in a garbage bag. I was like, "Oh, is that your work clothes?"
Yeah.
Like, and she like took them out of the bag. She's like, "Get them out of here."
Yeah.
She's, or like those are not going in my washer.
Like Outback or something.
Yeah.
There's no way that you can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not in Susan's house.
No.
Not in Susan's house.
No.
No.
That is crazy. I've always been very intrigued by steel mills. Obviously, just given the nature of the work and being in the industry, wondering where it all comes from. Because like we deal in raw material, obviously.
Yeah.
But when you really start thinking about like how, it's kind of like that show. Did you guys ever watch How It's Made?
With my dad?
Yeah.
All the time.
So like those types of questions when you're just looking at something and you're like, I just wonder.
Yeah.
I must know where this came from.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like that working in a place like that would really start answering so many questions.
Oh, for
sure. Like to really see how it's made is just so wild.
Oh, for sure. Like you see those big mills and you see those pieces of like molten metal literally being formed and then being cut. And just like thrown along the line. It's just like one after another, it just keeps going. And it's so cool to see.
So was this mill that you were working at, were they making all metal products?
They were making, it was mainly rebar and then channel and angle iron.
Okay.
That's pretty much what they focused on all of their time.
Okay. And is this pretty like small sizes of these things or did we get up into like massive?
No, we got up to like 60 foot pieces.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Cool. Okay. Okay. So a little steel mill work. I take it you did not work at the steel mill.
No, I did not.
I think you should. Okay. You might like it.
No, I'm okay.
So
I'm so comfortable where I'm at.
You would love to open your own shop someday. And what, and obviously we know that you guys are together. So do you hope to work together in your future after you guys are both done with your apprenticeships and things like that?
Like, no.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah.
Like, we don't even work together now. Like, we've never worked together. The closest we get to working together is we've
doing
had
this.
Trade
yeah.
school
yeah.
together. And then obviously, like, our podcast and all that.
Yeah.
And then other podcasts that we do. But my goal is to get off the tools, ultimately.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I want to get my license. Mm-hmm. It's Red Seal in Canada. So, like, Red Seal basically, I don't think you guys have it down here, but the difference between Red Seal and, like, the certification you would get here is that with our Red Seal, as soon as we get licensed and we have that Red Seal, we can go work anywhere. Like, we don't have to stay in Canada.
Mm. Oh, okay.
We can go work anywhere without
having
a research.
It's like a universal.
It's a universally recognized.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, I'll always have that to fall back on. Mm-hmm. And, like, obviously, I'll never leave the industry as a whole. I just don't want to be on the tools. Just like him, he says he wants to be a foreman. That's because he doesn't want to be on the tools. Yeah, exactly. But he still wants to be directly involved.
Yeah.
I would
And when you guys say on the tools, do you mean like the grunt work, manual labor?
Yes. Yeah, the actual manual labor.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But like, I want
to. Well, I mean, that's like hard to continue to do that for the rest of your life. I mean, that's like really. We've had a lot of fabricators in for this podcast. And I mean, yeah, there are people that have been doing this pretty much their whole lives, and then they're probably going to do it until they die.
Yeah.
But it's really hard, like just on your body, even your mental state. I feel like running your own shop can really be like mentally tasking as well. So I would understand not really wanting to do that forever.
Yeah. The only reason I got into steam fitting to begin with, I've been a welder for 5 years. So since basically the second I turned 18, I've been a welder. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I went into steam fitting is because our union, our training department, it is like mandatory that you have to do like a compulsory trade before you can do a skilled trade. So when I came into the union, they were like, okay, pick steam fitting or plumbing, and you have to finish that first before we'll let you be a welder.
Okay.
And I was like, but I've already been welding for like 2.5 years. But whatever. So I digress. I took a steam fitting apprenticeship, and once I get my steam fitting license, immediately I'm going to challenge my welding so that I can have that license as well. And then I will never work as a steam fitter again.
Yeah.
No. He will fit for me and I will weld. That is like how it's going to go.
I was going to say, so that's already the duo right there. But what does steam fitting entail then?
Steam fitting is basically like the equivalent to pipe fitting in the US, except we also work on high pressure steam. But if you look at it as like a duo, like fitter welder, like the welder will do all the tacking, all the welding. The fitter
the tacking sometimes, honestly. Yeah, usually the fitter tacks too, and then the welder comes in.
Yeah. So it's like you think about like a piece of pipe needs to be like welded to this fitting. The fitter literally does everything except for welding.
Okay.
Yeah. So the fitter will cut the pipe, they'll bevel it. They'll like make sure the gap's proper. Sometimes they'll even tack it. Mm-hmm. And then the welder will just come in and weld it.
Yeah, just like, comes in, burns it. Rod, welds it. Yeah. Job's done.
They don't have to do any of the heavy lifting.
So unless you guys have the dynamic duo right now.
Yeah, but I still don't think we'll ever actually work together because he works in wastewater.
Yeah.
And I work in like commercial. I do like a lot of hospitals and stuff like that.
Gotcha. So, okay. Yeah. Okay, cool.
As you can tell, I choose really interesting career paths.
Yeah. I stay with like the cleaner, like hospital. That's pretty clean. Last job I was on was on a boiler house refurb.
Okay.
So just replacing.
Is any of this like dangerous work? Is this? Yeah. I would imagine so.
I've had quite a few dangerous experiences actually on site.
Yeah, you have actually. Yeah,
recently.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that. If you can, I can.
We had a diesel truck delivering diesel, and we were just like standing there watching it, whatever. And I was on the other side of the diesel tank doing what apprentices do, the grunt work. And I just heard a boom, and I like walked around, and the truck was like up in smoke, and there was diesel everywhere. Oh, and I was like, what happened?
My God.
And they were like, I don't even know. And it was like this probably like 19-year-old kid who like worked for his dad's company that was driving the truck, and he was like, he had no idea what to do. I was like,
was this his fault? What did
like,
he do?
No, I'm pretty sure that the coolant tank like exploded in the truck.
So it was like no one's fault in particular, but
yeah,
this kid didn't know.
It made my day 4 hours longer. Yeah,
definitely.
So
wow.
Yeah, that's just one of them. I've also had people drop pipe on my head.
Yeah, that's also not good.
Yeah. I got a concussion over the summer because
you like have a helmet on, correct?
So I had a hard hat on, but like only thing that the hard hat is stopping is the pipe from cracking your head open. Yeah. It's not preventing you from getting a concussion.
Yeah, of course.
So I think I've had like, what, 3 concussions in the last year?
Yeah.
From pipe getting dropped on your head?
Or like, you know, not being the smartest and like standing up and hitting my head off of like valve handles.
Okay,
That's always a given though. And if you're not wearing a hard hat, that is like one of the worst feelings you could ever.
When you stand up and smack your head
off something.
Sometimes you can't wear a hard hat because you're like up in a ceiling and you're between like 18 million pipes nothing's going to fall on your head when you're up there. So they're not like really hard
until
on
your head wearing. Makes its own contact. Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. So, kind of got the idea of what you guys are doing now. So I'm very curious to hear. We'll start with you, Brooke.
Okay.
How'd you get into it? Like, what even led you to this career path?
So when I was growing up, my dad worked for GM. So he was always very hands-on, working in the garage, stuff like that as well. And I'm an only child. So to also very young parents, my parents, like my dad was only 22 when I was born.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time with my parents, obviously being an only child and having such young parents. So I was always out in the garage with my dad doing this, doing that, whatever it might be. And then when I got to like 18, I was a COVID graduate, actually.
Oh, I know. I understood that. Yeah.
So I didn't have school for like a year and a half. I worked full time because I was like, I don't like have to go to school. My grades aren't going to be any lower than they are. So I'm just going to go to work. And then when I got to 18, graduated, all that stuff, I was like, I also played very high level volleyball. So I was like, I'm going to go to college so I can keep playing volleyball. Mm-hmm. I didn't care about the schooling part of it like at all. My mom wanted me to be a nurse because I am type 1 diabetic. Mm-hmm. So she was like, go be a diabetes nurse. He's laughing because he's Filipino, so his whole family is nurses.
And my mom also wanted me to be a nurse.
Gotcha.
So she was like, oh, I was like, okay, whatever. I'll go pre-health science, like mm-hmm. feel it out, whatever. I lasted 3 weeks before I dropped out and like quit volleyball altogether. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And I took like a month or so off. And my mom was like, you've always been really hands-on. Like, why don't you look into a trade? Again, being diabetic, needed good benefits. Unions up in Canada offer really good benefits. So I was like, okay, I'll feel it out. I watched like one YouTube video on welding and I was like, yeah, sold. Okay, cool. Spent $14,000 to go to school because I needed, the union wouldn't even look at me until I had prerequisite schooling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I dropped $14,000 and went to school for, what was it, 3 months, I think.
Yeah, so it's like a really short program.
Yeah.
Wait, so what is the prerequisite to get into the trade school?
I didn't need a prerequisite to get into like the trade school that I went to, but I needed experience to get into the union.
Gotcha.
So I was like, okay, I'll go to school. So I went to school 3 months, a lot of money later, and then I was on the wait list to get into the union for another 2 years.
Oh yeah.
And then I finally, they were like, here's an offer for basic welding. So I went to basic welding as a non-member. They sponsored me, and then by the end of my school there, like the end of my 10 weeks, mm-hmm. I had a seat. That's basically the best way to put it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So started a lot with like your dad kind of being out there.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. My dad's a welder too. Well,
nice.
I grew up, he's a construction worker, like laborer, also in a union. But he does a lot of welding on the side. So I understand that. Nice. Yeah. Not an only child though. I'm one of five. So we were all kind of like, someone had to be the boy. Someone had to get out there and bother him. And like,
five sisters?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All girls.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
One of which you obviously already met. Yeah, she's the oldest and the youngest. So we got four in between. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But yeah, one of us had to get out there, bother him while he was doing said welding.
Yep.
But I'm still telling him, I said this to all the ladies that I talked to at FabTech 2025. I interviewed a lot of female welders and that was really fun. Mm-hmm. And I told all of them, like 2026, I'm going to learn how to weld.
Yeah,
even if I just like do something
able
so
to just
small.
Run just, a beat.
No, seriously. So I've been up my dad's ass.
Yeah.
Every weekend, I'm like, what are you doing? And he just keeps telling me, he's like, I got to switch it back to MIG or whatever. And I'm like, I literally don't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah.
Nor do I care.
You don't want to learn MIG.
I would just like, whichever one is like the easier one.
That's stick. MIG. No, what?
Well, no, sorry. MIG is easier, but I was saying you learn stick.
Whichever one. He said that he has to switch his whole setup back to. And I was like,
do you know what switching the setup entails?
Literally no.
Flipping a switch.
Yeah.
See, he's lying to me. He's lying to me.
Because
this man just doesn't want to teach me how to weld.
Calling your dad out on the podcast.
Yeah. Here. You hear that?
He would have to have two separate machines because you can't run MIG on the same machine that you can run stick and tag on. Yeah, you can run stick and tag on a machine.
So you're saying I need to reach out to him right after this podcast and tell him that he's a liar.
Yes.
Okay.
Precisely.
On it. Anyways, okay, so we have your background. Eric, you got to tell us how you ended up where
it's
you are today.
Kind of a little bit of the same of like mm-hmm. how she got in. So my dad also was in the trade. He's a licensed millwright.
Which is?
Millwright is a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Is like kind of a good way to put it. Like you learn the basics of
pretty much every trade.
A little bit of welding, a little bit of electrical, a little bit of plumbing.
I've seen that title a lot.
Yeah.
Like on LinkedIn. And I've never known what it is.
So I didn't know either.
Yeah. So no, I didn't even know what it was like half my life until I like basically my mom was trying to push me to go into healthcare as well when I turned like 16. And she's like, talk to your guidance counselor. And I was like, okay, cool. So I talked to my guidance counselor and he wanted every single person to do the exact same thing he did, which was go to university and like take kinesiology and then you can be a gym teacher. So like every single one, me, all my friends would go in there and we'd be like, what do he tell you to do? And he's like, oh, like
kinesiology.
Take kinesiology. So like, I'm not talking really, to this guy anymore.
Yeah, that's odd.
Yeah. So finally, like one day I went up to my dad and I was like, what should I do? And he's like, you're good with your hands. Like you can go out and like do a trade. So I went and did like a prerequisite course as well, but it wasn't at a private institution like Brooke did hers at. It was at just the regular college in my town. So I did like the trade fundamentals program. It gave me like a couple weeks of each trade per se. So I did like a little bit of carpentry, a little bit of plumbing, a little bit of welding, HVAC, all that stuff. And then I didn't really know where to go after that. So a couple of my buddies started their plumbing apprenticeships doing service right when they were 18. So as soon as I finished, I called them and I was like, hey, any of you guys hiring? And that's kind of how I got in. I did that for about a year. I wasn't really enjoying it that much.
That company sucked.
Yeah. I was working like 18-hour days, making like minimum wage.
In the steel mill.
In the steel mill. Yeah. And like when you're a young apprentice in the steel mill too, like it is not.
Well,
like,
you're doing like bitch work.
Yeah, like, I'm like hauling lengths of pipe up like 20 flights of stairs, just covered in like black soot the whole time. So I tried to get in the union.
It takes a special kind of person to be able to do that because like so many people would probably just day one out the door quit.
I would be one of those people.
That,
but I also wanted to get in the union as well. The same thing as Brooke, but they wouldn't take me being younger and not having any experience. So like I kind of took that non-union job as like a way to get my foot in the door, knowing that like in the future, if I like stick it out here, I can try and get in the union maybe in like a year, maybe in 2 years, whenever you're looking for apprentices again. And that will be ultimately like what gets me further in my career.
Yeah.
So I kind of just had to push through that for a little while.
I figured it's probably the same here. I should know more about this given that my dad was also in the union and I've like brother-in-laws are in the union. Those wait times, is it just because it's so competitive to get a spot? Are they really wanting to see all these different prerequisites, requirements, skills before you can get in?
I feel like the wait time is just our union because I know we talked about it earlier.
Gotcha.
Our union has like 15,000 members, which is the second largest member base in like the United Association, which is like the group of unions that we work for, I guess. But yeah, we're just Toronto. It's not like we're like Southern Ontario or anything like that. It's just Toronto. We have 15,000 members, 7,000 apprentices. Right?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So the wait list isn't like a, oh, we need to see X, Y, and Z from you first. It's just we have 3,000 people on the wait list ahead of you.
Yeah.
The only reason I got in fairly quick, like when you look at it, the only reason I feel like I got in is because when I started into the trade, there was a really big push for women in the trades at the time.
Yeah.
So me being younger, wanting to be a welder, having some experience, all of that, they were like, yeah, let's go.
You
like,
kind of got bumped a little bit higher up.
Because I know people that have been trying to get into the union, like welders who have been welding for like 10 years that I've known for a while since like I worked in, like I was a manager at a gym right before I got into the union for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. There was people that I knew from there that have been trying to get into our union for like 5 years already. And then I got in before them. And I would get like cornered at the gym when I would go back and they would be like, how'd you get in? And I was like, I'm a girl.
Okay, it was not my decision, but I'm also not mad about it.
Yeah,
exactly. But yeah, so I feel like that's pretty much it. There's just so many people trying to get into our union because we're paid well. We have good benefits.
Yeah, it's like, usually, I feel like the benefits is such a massive thing. Yeah. I mean, that was at least for like my dad with us growing up, huge reason why he's kept that job or the entire time that I was growing up. Because I mean, the benefits for a family of seven, crazy.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Wild.
I could see that.
And that's the thing now too, is like you go and try to find jobs. It's hard to actually find full-time work with pension and benefits, any kind of benefits at all, really. Like when I was working non-union, I didn't have benefits. It was costing me, like when I went to the dentist like twice that year I was working there, I think it cost me like almost $700 out of pocket just to go get my teeth cleaned.
For sure.
And like it's something that I want to keep up with because like I've been doing it my whole life.
Yeah.
It's like personal hygiene.
Yeah, well, and then it's tough because then you're like, well, I don't really want to pay for this right now. But then that's when you get actual problems, which the fixing the problems way more expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Much more expensive. But like the preventative care is already like wildly expensive. Yeah. So I would imagine that the that's probably why there's such a big push. Well, and then also like we had talked briefly about, which we'll probably get more into this later on in the conversation, looking for jobs that not a lot of other people might be willing to do. There's a lot of people that, especially coming out of college or universities, want to maybe work at a desk, work with computers, things like that. But now people are looking more for the people that are willing to do hands-on, more of that grunt work too, which I think is, I wouldn't say few and far between. Like you said, there's a list of 3,000 people waiting to get into the union. But I just don't think, which this kind of plays into the whole conversation on the skilled trades gap. Where that shift is happening with the younger generations. Ending the stigma behind people going into the trades. And also probably getting guidance counselors that actually advocate for the trades and not just tell people to become kinesiology majors.
That's a very good point.
But which that kind of takes us into the next part of our conversation is talking about that skilled trades gap. And just because you guys are younger, you guys have now been in the trades pretty much since you turned 18. Done all sorts of different skills and you have union experience now. What are your guys' opinions on the gap? How did it start? Where do you think it's going? Even just kind of what you've seen from your own personal experience and then what you're seeing just in general in the industry.
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about this on our podcast quite a few times, but I've always said in my experience, I see a very like definitive line between people that are like 40 and under and people that are 40 and over, in our trade at least. I find that the 40 and under crowd, when it comes to like the journeyman, the foreman, whatever it might be, those guys do not care if you're male, female, race, sexual preference, anything like that. As long as you show up and show that you're willing to work and that you like actually care to learn, they are 100% willing to teach you everything that they know. And then obviously you get a few in that younger category that are
There's always
more
bad apples
traditional.
Yeah, of course.
I'll say more traditional. And then you get a few in the older category that are like, realize like, hey, I'm going to retire in 5 years. Like I should
you
probably
want someone to come
pass
after you.
My knowledge on. And then that 40 and older, I have had older welders who have straight up refused to work with me because I'm a girl. And they've used the excuse of like, oh, you're like, to my face, they'll be like, oh, you're so young. You're so pretty. Like you shouldn't be here. And I'm like, okay, but I am.
But I am, so we might as well
like, what are
get
we doing
going.
Here? Yeah, and then like to my foreman or whatever, they'd be like, I'm not working with a girl. She doesn't know what she's doing. So they would, these old hand welders, some of them would rather pay a fifth-year apprentice who is only 15% below journeyman rate, however much, almost $50 an hour to stand there and watch them weld. Whereas I was a first year at the time, I was getting paid like pennies on the dollar compared to them. And they would rather have the person that they're paying way more stand around and do nothing than the person that they're paying less just to watch the welder. So that's like kind of where I stand on that. But
no, it's literally the same thing for me too. Because it's just like the way people were taught, right? You have those guys that are like, I don't know, say like you said.
Traditional.
40 to retirement age, where they were like brought up and everything was just so different compared to where it is now. And like, they need to realize that like the state of the world now, like the way work is in the trades is so much better than it was back then.
Yeah.
Like we even had people talk to you about that this week, like compliment you about that this week. Just talking about how like when women showed up on job sites, that's like when job sites actually got clean and got like washrooms and water and like different things like that.
I totally forgot that conversation even happened. I have now actually remember who that was.
But that was like really cool being recognized in that way. Even like me being with you, like it's cool when she gets like recognition for stuff like that. Like it's like it's badass.
Yeah, I heard that a lot. From especially my conversation with Demi Knight Clark at FabTech, she was saying a lot of the same things about how even just the environments of these workplaces have changed, and how, I mean, you would think that it is a lot better. And also, I think something that's kind of cool, even if you don't want to admit that or accept, maybe is a better word, that the younger generations are coming in, wouldn't you want people, like if you've been doing this your whole entire life and you're older and you might be thinking about retiring, like wouldn't you want these younger people that are coming in who are like super excited about it? Like if you don't want them, who do you want? No
exactly.
one?
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know if you're connected with Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, but he talks about this a lot. So. He has a pretty big podcast too. Yeah, the name of it slipping my mind right now, but he on LinkedIn all the time talks about how there's going to be like, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but there's like 50,000 welders retiring in the next 5 years and we need 80,000 welders just to replace them.
Yeah.
And it's like people like companies and all of that complain about not having anybody to hire. And it's like, okay, but you have to hire those first year apprentices that don't have experience and teach them. You can't just hire like, for example, a third year who's been doing it.
Yeah.
And has experience and all that stuff. Where are they going to get that experience if you're not hiring them?
Like, it's like the funny thing. Like I've seen this meme a lot on LinkedIn when, and this applies to like all jobs, anyone that's like job seeking, whatever. And it was something like me going out to job hunt and the requirements or the prerequisites was like, you have to have 10 years of experience, 5 more years of this skill.
Yeah.
So pretty much you needed to start when you were like a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that work for you? Yes or no?
Exactly.
And it is kind of funny because you're like, but where does one get the experience that you're asking for?
Yeah.
If everyone's asking for that same thing, but no one's actually willing to give it.
Exactly.
Very confusing.
We also have to think that there was that, like my welding instructor, Marty, he was in that age group where they like ripped shops out of high school. They didn't have shop classes anymore. They were hot. They were pushing going into like the computer.
Industry, yeah.
Yeah.
IT, all of that stuff.
It's exactly.
Coding.
So there's like, that, there's like a gap in like, I find that there's people our age pretty much. So like 25 and under the trades were, we were exposed to the trades a lot growing up. Yeah. So there's a lot of us that went into the trades, but then there's that gap between like 25 and 35.
Yeah.
10 years where nobody was going into the trades because in school you were told, in school you were told like, don't go into the trades. If you go into the trades, you're dumb, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's the best way to put it. So there's that gap of like 10 years and it's like, who's going to fill that gap? That's, those would be the people that have the experience that you're talking about, that have that 10 years experience or whatever it might be. But those were also the people who were told, don't go into the trades.
Yeah, they were pushed towards like a different career field.
Yeah. Well, and it's a, all kind of a balancing act too, because when we did our podcast with Chris Lukey, I know that we were talking about him earlier. Yeah. He made a great point that when you discuss the skilled trades gap, you also have to consider you can't make the pendulum swing so far the other way that, that now every single person, let's just say like, just hypothetically, in the next couple of years, all we teach in schools is trade, like in high school is trades, and then we don't advocate for universities at all. Well, then now you don't have engineers because you have to have like a balance of both.
Yeah,
because those things have to work in tandem. They don't, we still need the people that are going to build it, but we also need the people that design it and create it and think of all the things that could go wrong and all.
And
when
you
said
it,
that I was like, fantastic point.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So you have to, and obviously there's a lot of outside of the things that we build and make and create, there's a lot of other jobs that you can choose from. So like we want to make everything look like a good option and pick whatever's going to be the most, make that person the most successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, and like you said, with your guidance counselor, I feel like we probably do need people in the schools that are actually advocating for both sides, whether it's like bringing in someone from the trades that goes into high schools and like tells everyone about it. But you definitely can't just be telling people that the only thing that they can do is become a gym teacher.
Right. Like there has to be, there has to be both sides. Like if you have guidance counselors in school, you have, they have to like be willing to like look at the person as an individual and be like, what is your skill set?
And also, how are they brought up? Like,
and that
just
too
like you were saying, you guys were already a little bit exposed to this growing up. So if they asked you that versus like, even though I had a dad in the trades, my mom did only tech stuff.
Okay.
So like I had a little, and she went to college. My dad did not. So I had almost like both of those worlds converging.
Yeah.
So, but if they would have known about that, how would they have played that card? Have been like, well, you've been exposed to both, so like, where do your, where are your interests? Like, but I do think it definitely starts a lot in the schools. And my conversation with Demi Knight Clark, she actually runs a, she started a camp for kids as young as six, called Reimagined Rosies. You guys should look it up. But they teach skills and they teach welding to kids like that young, and it's like a camp that they can. She just helps them like learn anything and everything, pretty much. Like anything that they want to build, she'll like help them build it. And I think it was, I can't remember what, I'd have to go back and listen to our episode, but one, they had like a really cool project that like rockets or something like that they were working on. It was really cool, but you guys will have to go check that out. But because she's a big advocate for not only talking about the gap, but also when she mentioned the number that is needed, like who is leaving and then who we need coming in, she posed the question like, but who do we actually need? Because you can't just say we need X amount of welders. Like you actually have to start asking like, but what spots do we need filled? Where do we need them kind of like backfilling into? Mm-hmm. What skills are required? And then we have to almost like work backwards from there.
Yeah.
But if you guys, so you guys have kind of been living it. Mm. What would you say, in your opinion, how do we solve something like this? Or how do we start to close the gap? Or do you think it's already happening?
I definitely think it's already happening.
Yeah.
Up in Canada, at least, because when we talk about like career days at school and stuff like that, and guidance counselors bring stuff in, I speak at schools quite often just about like the skilled trades and like all of that stuff, right?
Oh, nice.
At career days and stuff like that. So, and I feel like it's pretty balanced. Like, you'll have people that are in like real estate, you'll have people that work in this sector, this, that, whatever job it might be. And these kids are getting a lot more exposure to kind of everything that's out there.
Yeah.
So, I see it happening up in our area, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I obviously can't attest to down here, but...
Yeah. No, yeah. I can as well. Like, I know a lot of people that are reaching out to even me now, but, like, to you as well, looking for, like, just opportunities for apprenticeships. And it's, like, the hardest part is just getting your foot in the door. It's like we talked about earlier with experience. Like, you want guys with experience. Companies want these people, but they won't give anybody that first shot, kind of. Which sucks, because I also went through the first, I went through that firsthand too.
Yeah.
And it does suck when you're young, you want to get in the trade, you're full of energy, and it's just like cold calling all day, company after company. And it's just like, yeah, we'll reach back out to you. Mm-hmm. Let me check. We'll reach back out to you. And then you just never hear back.
Yeah.
Now the cold calling sucks. Like when you get laid off. Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you guys secure your apprenticeships? Was it literally that, genuinely just picking up the phone and just calling around? Or does your... Does the union help facilitate that?
So you have to get into the union, well, the way that it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
Anyways, you have to get into the union first. And then with our union, there's list hire unions and there's name hire unions. Mm. List hire unions are very, very strict on like you go on the list and the people get hired from top to bottom.
Okay.
Our union is more name hire. I would say there is a list.
More name hire.
Obviously, if you like don't have a network like I do, you can go on the list and they'll find you a job eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first got in and I was put on the list, I waited 3 months to be dispatched. So I sat on unemployment for three months before I got dispatched. And now, like, the best way to go about it in our union, anyways, is calling companies. Or like I use my LinkedIn network. Every job that I've gotten in the union has been through LinkedIn.
Yeah,
that's good advice for the people out there, because they might not have been told that yet.
I built his entire LinkedIn.
Yeah, she built my entire LinkedIn. When I was looking for new work, because I'd been with my previous contractor for like 3 years, and I just wanted something new. I was like telling her, I was like, I don't even know who to call anymore. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know which list to even be looking off of. She's like, you need to make a LinkedIn. And then she built my whole LinkedIn for me. And honestly, like, I wouldn't be actually in the position I'm in now without having a LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So
I've seen a lot of people talk about, well, because obviously it is kind of the platform for our industry. Mm-hmm. And we experience that the most. We most heavily promote ourselves on LinkedIn because it's the biggest platform for B2B, which is what Bryzos does. Mm-hmm. But it is crazy how the shift, because I have to be on LinkedIn all the time just because I handle all of our social media. And the shift in, I feel like it is becoming more of a social platform.
Yes.
Rather than, it was so much more like even 5 years ago, just about networking, job searching, things like that.
It was very white collar before.
For sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is crazy the use of it in like the metals industry and manufacturing and stuff. Cause that's like, that's the only people I follow on LinkedIn at this point.
Same.
But so from that, where did Sisterhood of Trades, cause at this point, our audience will have seen Shep's episode with Nush, and you guys started Sisterhood of Trades together. Is that correct?
I did not.
You did not start it.
No.
Okay, so how did you get into that?
So I have a rather decent following not following, reach on TikTok, I guess you could say, in the blue collar industry. I posted a video one day that took me probably about 3 seconds to film, caption and post, and it got 2 million views.
That's crazy.
And I was
crazy.
Like, oh, okay, so people actually do want to see like this kind of content.
Yeah.
And what was the video?
It was so funny. It's so relatable.
I'll literally just pull it up and show you. You can edit this part out if you want, but...
Because I will randomly get videos like that I'm like, having no TikTok, I would have never seen something like this, which I just think is amazing.
Okay. Make sure it's all up. That's it. Do you see what I mean when I say it took me literally 3 seconds? Yeah. Like, yeah, so I posted that one, and then I posted another one probably like 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, you're an apprentice, your days must be super busy. And it's like me threading a fitting on. And then it pans to me just standing beside a ladder. And the caption is, waits for journeyman to come back. Because like, when you're
an apprentice. You can't like do anything on your own.
You can, but it's like your journeyman will give you a task to do. Mm-hmm. And then they'll go do something else. And then like you finish the task and you can't find your journeyman.
You have to like wait
for them. So you're like sitting there twiddling your thumbs. And I don't know, a lot of people were hating on me in the comments section.
Oh, yeah, you got so much hate in that comment section. Oh my God. So
being a woman in the trades, you just get a lot of hate on social media, period. The only platform that I don't get hate on is LinkedIn.
So everyone's so professional on LinkedIn.
Well, because it's also, I'd say, a little bit more mature.
Yeah.
Yes.
TikTok, you get younger.
It's a more mature audience. Yeah. Sure.
Like, I had one comment on one of my videos where it was like, this guy said, if you make TikToks at work, you're a shit tradesman. Whoa. And I clicked on his profile and tell me why every single video he had was posted at work, of him at work.
Yeah. So I screenshotted
his profile and that was my reply to the comment. I usually don't reply to the hate comments, but that one just like,
you didn't even
have
to say anything.
Yeah. But yeah, so like, anyways, the whole social media thing is just so crazy to me. There's so many videos. I just went on a tangent. Now I don't even remember where we were going with that.
Sisterhood of Trades.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you have you had a large reach on TikTok originally starting off, and then you kind of pivoted.
Yes. So I had that following on TikTok. Mm-hmm. I posted those couple videos that got like a lot of traction. And then I posted another video with just like a few clips that I had of me just like messing around, doing stuff like at home or like whatever it might be. And I was like, why isn't there a community, like an online community just for like apprentices to like get to know each other, help each other out, whatever it might be.
Give advice.
Yeah. And there's this girl who's also in our union hall who commented and just tagged the sisterhood. And
nice.
I was like, I'm intrigued by this. And then they DM me. They were like, here's the list or the link to our Discord and all that stuff. So I got in there. I just got like really active. I think I joined in July 2025. Okay. They started it. So there's four co-founders. So it's Noosh, Carly, Hannah, and Zoe were the four original co-founders. And then now we have four moderators as well. So myself, Cece is kind of the one that does like the server
Discord
and like
wizard.
IT. Yeah, we call her the Discord wizard.
No, she was telling me a little bit about her. Because then I saw the way that it's like organized. I'm like, that does take some skill to do that because I don't even know how.
Yeah, it's something I would never be able to do.
Yeah,
no. So she handles that kind of stuff. And then we recently added Catherine and Julia. They are secondary moderators. So they basically just handle like server oversight and make sure that the conversations are how they should be and that nobody's fighting.
Yeah.
And all that stuff, basically.
Hating on each other.
Because when you put like 1,200 women in the
same. Yeah, of course.
It's like bound to happen every now and then. But yeah, I just started connecting with everybody, basically just talking to everybody. One time somebody was looking for a job and I was like, are you on LinkedIn? And Noosh also was obsessed with LinkedIn. So that was when she kind of started talking to me more. She was like, oh my God, you like LinkedIn? We're best friends now. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So yeah, her and I kind of just connected from there. And then I had surgery in
It was like late September.
Yeah. And I was off for 3 weeks. So obviously during that time I was like in the server more because he was at work. I couldn't do
anything.
Yeah,
you're like,
I was like, I might as well talk to these people all day.
Of course.
So I did. And then they were like, oh, like we think you should be on the moderator team. And I was like, okay. So I thought I was just going to be doing the same thing, like server oversight, this and that. But then also with my following on social media, I was writing articles. Like I have a newsletter on LinkedIn. I was writing articles. I was starting to do podcast interviews. Like people were starting to have me on their podcasts, all that stuff. So I started getting a little bigger and a little bigger and a little bigger. And then Noosh was like, oh, you should start your own podcast. I was like, right, I should start my own podcast. And then I roped him into it with me.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically just got really active in the server. And then they were like, hey, like, be an actual part of our team. And I was the only one in Canada. Mm-hmm. Well, not the only one in the server in Canada, but the only one on the admin team in Canada.
Okay.
Now we have Julia. We just added her like 4 days ago. She's really cool. She cat sits our cats when we leave the country and stuff. So
shout out Julia for that.
We love Julia. Yeah. She also baked us cookies and brought them.
Yeah, she also did for, that
for like
too,
Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh,
but yeah.
Love that.
The community is so cute.
I was going to say, like, what sounds like a lot, but what do you feel like you've gained from being a part of that community?
I feel like the main thing that I've gained is just like a community because it's real. Like, I can come home and I can talk to him about work because we're in the same trade.
Yeah.
But he's not going to understand what I'm talking about. Like, you know, the snarky comment that this guy made to me or like the fact that there was no women's bathroom on this like refurb that I went and did or whatever it might be. Right. So just having that community where I can talk to these women who understand what I go through every day, like even if we work in different trades, like all of the experiences are the same. Like I feel like none of us have a unique experience.
Yeah.
Like we've all experienced the same things, whether it be like sexual harassment, which happens a lot more than I like, obviously.
Yeah.
To like some journeyman just refusing to work with you because you're a girl or like all that stuff. So
yeah. Well, and then I feel like you can even start getting like some big sisterly advice type of conversations going on to like help people under you or over you or whatever it may be. And it also sounds like, at least based on me now knowing you and Nush, that maybe all of the co-founders or different moderators each have like kind of their own different background too of like what skills you guys are doing, which I feel like is good because then your reach is much broader with like the different people that you're talking to.
Yeah, because we have Nush who's in manufacturing. Carly's also a pipe fitter.
Okay.
And then we have Hannah who's a TIG welder. Julia's an electrician. Catherine's a millwright.
See, I feel like that's already like such a broad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of hit almost like hit everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because we talk about how you don't see people in the same trade dating a lot. Right. But like I'm dating a steam fitter. I'm a steam fitter dating a steam fitter. Carly's a pipe fitter dating a pipe fitter.
Yeah.
Julia's an electrician dating an electrician.
Really?
Yeah. That's true. I forgot all about that kind
of
stuff.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So it was like that was another cool thing for both of us, I feel like, because we have only heard of one other couple in our union hall.
Yeah.
They actually just got married. That's the only reason I think I knew they were together because they were in our
we saw it in the magazine.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like meeting other people who like also are dating people in the trade. Yeah. That was really cool.
Have similar just lifestyles.
Yeah.
And
a lot of people will come to us and be like, how do you guys have a life where you don't just talk about work all the time? And it's like, well, considering our podcast, like we do talk about work a lot.
We do talk about work a lot.
But we don't feel like it interferes with our relationship. At least I don't. I don't think you do either.
Sorry, I thought you were speaking for both of us.
But yeah, I don't feel like it interferes just because we both have very strong personalities as well. So like there's things that I'm passionate about. Like we both are the biggest football fans on the face of the planet.
Okay.
So it's like if we're not talking about work, we're talking about football.
Okay.
You know? So
that's a very good point.
Yeah. A lot of people will come to us for like relationship advice. Yeah. They all call him Mr. Brooke.
Yeah.
In the server.
Yeah.
So
everyone in the sisterhood calls me Mr. Brooke.
That's really
and
funny.
We actually have our ally role that we opened up now too. So he's actually in the server.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like they have access to a few rooms. So we have like, who else is in there? We have Paul Van Meter. He just joined.
I follow him on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah. So he just joined. We have quite a few people. Mostly in the manufacturing industry because I feel like Nush and I's networks are mainly the manufacturing industry, which is crazy because I've never even seen manufacturing happening like in front of me.
Yeah.
But the manufacturing networking goes crazy
it
compared
does.
To like
it
the
does.
Pipe trade side or anything like that. Like,
I just think they've really locked in on the LinkedIn thing. Because I mean,
that's what it is,
Because I think I end up meeting so many people on LinkedIn because of that. But like truly our who we work the most with at Brizos and with our platform is fabricators.
Okay.
Yeah. Like that's usually it. And we end up obviously meeting a lot of different people who own their own shops. We're talking like welders, fabricators, pretty much anyone making anything out of raw commodity like materials.
Yeah.
But so we're not us ourselves as a company, we're not super involved with like manufacturing unless you're a company that also like makes parts and you do, you know, raw materials.
Yeah.
But just being on LinkedIn as much as I am, sometimes The fabricator sides of things, they can be a little bit more quiet.
Yes.
Not as like super active on a platform like LinkedIn. Definitely met a lot of people. I'd say the bigger the company gets, they get a little bit more active.
Yeah,
but you get down to like the small shops around here and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's more reaching out to them in a different way because they're usually not going to be super active.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. But yeah, the manufacturing, like Lee was on Making Sparks, which is part of like the Making Chips, which I know Nush works with them, I believe. Yeah. So yeah, but like that whole kind of sphere of people, they go hard on LinkedIn.
So I was gonna say like I just joined a networking, I didn't even think I told you this when you were at your haircut, I joined a networking webinar
that
Paul was hosting through Pro Shop. I literally, Noosh told me about it like I think it ended at 3 and Noosh told me about it at like 2:55, so I got like the last 5 minutes of it, whatever, and just from that like 5 minutes that I was in there, I probably had like, some people stayed after and continued talking, so Noosh and I stayed and just, like, listened. But I had, like, 7 people just from that, like, 10 minutes that I was in there. They saw my name pop up in the chat and went and connected with me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right?
So.
It's honestly sometimes that easy. And just kind of, like, this is something me and Noosh talked about a lot, but just marketing yourself, like, posting more, posting daily, posting about your life, but also posting about work. And yeah, I mean, I've noticed that even just like for myself, posting from my personal rather than just the company. Because people do like to see a face with a name.
Yeah, of course.
Get some personality behind it.
Yeah.
But a question that has been on my mind pretty much since I talked to Noosh. You must tell me how you came up with your podcast name. Because it is the best podcast name in the world. So why don't you guys introduce the podcast a little bit? Like tell me how it started, how you guys even like came up with it, and tell me about the name.
Okay. So you can say what our podcast name is, actually.
All right. So we host a podcast together. It is called Two Bolts Short of a Flange. Yeah. We work with flanges a lot as steam fitters.
Yeah.
So that part was like kind of a given when we were thinking of names.
Yeah.
But here, you talk about the podcast a little bit first, and then we'll go into the naming of it.
Two Bolts Short of a Flange kind of came from, like the name of it kind of came from, it's like a term in like the trade world anyways of something being like, you know, just a little off or like not right. So I was like, hey man, I always tell everybody, I'm like, get it, because it's like we're the two bolts that are short.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks I'm really lame when I say that, but I think it's really funny.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. So that came from, Noosh had just relocated from North Carolina to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously like up and left the life that she had there for like years. And I was like, hey, you're moving like an hour and a half away from me. I have a passport. Like, so I think it was like she moved home. And then like the next weekend, I had booked an Airbnb in Buffalo. I booked an Airbnb in Buffalo. And I was like, we're going to meet. Like she had taken a hiatus from posting her own podcast, Next Gen MFG. So I was like, we're going to come. We're going to record Next Gen.
Yeah.
We're gonna hang out, like,
all because I was stuff. Already following you guys, I think, or at least Noosh by the time you guys did your first episode. So I saw like the inception of this.
Yes. So we were like, we're gonna come, we're gonna hang out, we're gonna record your podcast. Like, and that first day, so we got there Friday night and we left Sunday, right?
Yeah, it was the Saturday we did.
Yes.
All of the recording.
So we got there Friday night. Noosh was flying back from Texas.
No, I thought it was Boston.
I thought it was Texas.
It was definitely Texas. Never mind. Don't listen. It was actually definitely
she's
Texas.
She's on planes all the time.
Yeah.
But anyways, she was flying back from Texas because she had went to an event there. And we were like, okay, we're already going to be in the area, so we'll just pick you up from the airport. Picked her up from the airport, took her home, whatever. Next morning, she drove to our Airbnb and we set up to record.
Yeah.
We recorded on Saturday for 14 hours. We recorded like 4 episodes. And at the time, when we were driving up on the Friday, I got a screen recording of a news clip that was sent in our group chat, like our admin group chat. And the screen recording was of a news article that had just been released about Amber Check.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you heard about
that. Yes, I did.
And they sent a screen recording because, you know, Canada likes to block news like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't actually see any of it until it started coming up on my social media, but that wasn't until after they had sent me the screen
recording. Yeah, I only saw it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, so that topic came up, obviously, like something that we talk about all the time, something that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
so
of course.
We recorded an episode about that, recorded a few other episodes, all of that stuff. And then we were sitting there. It's like 1 in the morning. at this point. And Noosh is like, you guys should start a podcast. Like, Noosh is like, you already...
1 a.m. thoughts.
No, literally. 1 a.m.
There was, like, alcohol involved.
For you.
Oh, for me, actually.
Yeah. I don't really drink. I have, like, one glass of wine. Noosh also doesn't drink, obviously, for religious reasons.
For you.
Yeah. Don't drag me under that bus with you. But anyways, so we're, like, sitting there. He'd already gone to bed. Noosh and I are still up. And she's like, you should start a podcast. And I was like, bro, you're so right. I should start a podcast. And I'm sitting there and I'm like trying to think of names. Oh, no, you didn't go to bed yet because we're trying to think of names.
No, we recorded an episode.
Yes. But at this point, it was only my podcast. So I was like.
You didn't get the invite yet.
No, I didn't get the invite yet.
I didn't know if he'd want to like be on a podcast with me, like host a podcast with me. So I was just like, I'll start the podcast. If he wants to like be on a few episodes, like
you can be a guest if you
want. I don't care. Do whatever you want. And then I was like trying to come up with names and I'm just like thinking and I'm thinking of like terms in our trade and like things that I could play off words. And we were like, we were already recording the first episode. Mm-hmm. We didn't even have a name yet. And this is not the first episode that we used. By the way, it was so bad.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Sometimes you got to get the test run out there.
Yeah. But we were like, okay, shooting names back and forth. And then I was like, yo, two bolts short of a flange. And all three of us just like cracked up.
Yeah. The fact that you got that like in that moment is crazy because we... Yeah. For how like funny ours is, we took like days to decide about ours because we thought it was just hilarious. Because we were like, this is really going to ruffle some feathers. And it does. But we went back and forth and back and forth. I'm like, should we just do something like the Brizos podcast? Like do we just keep it simple? And I'm like, but no, you know, Shep was like, everyone kind of does that, like where it's just their name and podcast.
Yeah.
So he's like, we got to do something where people remember it. The fact that you guys came up with that in that moment is crazy because that takes... That could take a very long time of brainstorming to come up with something like that.
We're also just like very compulsive people as a whole.
Yeah, we are.
Sometimes best ideas come out of moments like that, though.
Yeah. So we were like, fuck it. This is a podcast name. Like, we're going with it. Recorded our first episode.
Yeah.
That episode will never see the light of day. It stays on the hard drive and it will never leave.
It's so bad.
Okay. Really bad.
We have something like that, too. That's all right.
Yeah. But basically, he went to bed after that. I'm trying to come up with a logo design in Canva. First time I ever used Canva, trying to come up with a logo design. So whatever, I get the logo done. It's like 2:30 in the morning. I go in there and I'm like, yo, do you want to be my co-host? Like, you want to do this together?
You're waking
up. He's like half asleep and he's like, yeah, sure, babe, whatever you want. And I was like, okay, cool. We drove home from Buffalo the next day.
Yeah.
We bought a mic. We bought headphones. We bought like a boom arm.
Nice.
Everything. And then we were like, cool, let's go. Like,
yeah. Well, we had that conversation too. Because we actually... Wait, this is actually funny that this is coming up. Today is the 1 year anniversary of this podcast.
Oh, no way.
Yes, I had it on my calendar and so we had recorded like that same week that, because this would have been 1 year like from our very first episode airing and we recorded like that week.
Yeah.
So we, and Shep had said that too, where he was like, well, you could spend so much time prepping for it, like doing all this stuff. But he's like, literally, because we already had all the cameras and everything because we did a docuseries about our company. So we didn't have like these or anything and the set was not here yet.
Yeah.
But he was like, honestly, I think we just like start, we just flip on a camera and just start getting guests in here and we just like see what happens.
Yeah.
So like you'll notice the very first episode looks way different in like quality.
Oh, of course.
And like even how the conversation flowed.
Yeah.
But like as you do them, you like slowly just start tweaking things and like it gets better and better and better. Oh, so
one year already in, like, progressing because we're moving and we talked about how we're going to have an actual studio now. So
it'll be so much better.
So how many episodes do you guys have right now?
We have.
Out at least.
Out, we have six.
Yeah. Okay.
We have six episodes right now.
Okay.
Yep. So basically, I feel like our podcast vibe is kind of the same as yours, but we talk to people across the industry.
Yeah, it's like unscripted.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, people from like leadership positions to apprentices who have only been working for like a month.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Like we talk to everybody just about like same thing, how they got into it, their experiences. Like we talk about industry bullshit a lot as well and like things that we want to call out. But then Noosh and I also have a podcast now.
Okay. Wait, did I see this one?
Probably.
Which one is that?
Deburr this motherfucker.
I have not heard of that one. What was that?
Deburr this motherfucker, because deburring is a term in manufacturing and in pipe fitting.
There's hilarious.
You know, there's burrs. Okay. You got to get them off.
Yeah. Okay.
So that one is basically just me and Noosh, no guests.
Okay.
And we just talk about our experiences. We call out all the shit that we see on a daily basis, all that stuff. Our first episode aired on January 7th.
Yeah,
it was the 7th.
Yeah, they're coming out monthly. But we also have bloopers because Noosh and I cannot be serious about like anything.
Yeah, I get that.
Ever. So our blooper reel was like originally longer like than the actual 9 minutes long.
Recordings.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then our episode, I think, came out to being like 40 something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really fun to record that one too. Okay. Because like, I also feel like not having guests and just like talking back and forth, like just the two of us.
Sometimes
it's
so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like that would be fun. And my fear would be like, I wouldn't have anything to talk about. But when I think about that with like my sisters, I'm like, we could probably talk for 12 hours straight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Noosh and I were sitting there. We didn't have like any idea what we were going to talk about. We just like hopped on to record and we were like, shit. We should probably figure out what we're going to talk about. Yeah. So we're like scrolling through like the Discord being like, okay, yeah, let's have you ever cried on site? Like it's just random and like stories like that. And a lot of maybe, maybe not. This may or may not be hearsay.
Yeah.
That was said probably like four times during the episode.
Allegedly.
I might have potentially, but yeah.
Okay. So my one last question about your podcast. Yeah. I know I told you guys about this at the beginning. If you could have dream guest scenario for Two Bolts Short of a Flange podcast. Mm-hmm. Who would it be? They can be different.
Okay.
He's like, let me pull up the LinkedIn real quick.
You got to.
I got to fire up my phone quick.
And this would be like anyone in the, with no barriers. Anyone you could possibly have on?
Anybody, like, not even trades related? I would have George Pickens from the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, we're going like that.
You go. Creative.
I'm going with Nick Saban then.
Okay, yeah, that's a really good one.
These both football ones.
Yeah.
I take it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nick Saban was the coach of Alabama Crimson Tide football for like a million years. One of the greatest coaches to ever go down in the history of football.
I thought we were going like trades related.
I was also going to go trades related, but then I was like,
hey man. Okay, so trades related person, do you have anyone in mind that you were like, if they walked in the door?
What about you?
I feel like I haven't really thought about it because like we're just so early in the podcast.
That's true. Maybe that'll come to fruition later on when you start really digging into your LinkedIn and stuff. And you see someone that you're like, oh.
It would be really cool for me to have like one of the higher ups from the UA.
Yeah.
Just to come and talk about everything.
That'd be a good one.
That's like the like my trade nerd in me though, being like, I just want to pick his brain and talk about everything.
Yeah. Anytime you get somebody like that with that experience where you can pick their brain, like the conversation's always.
Yeah,
it would go on forever. Yeah, yes. Just totally organic.
Somebody that you can relate to as well. Like it would be great.
That's
very true.
Well, we'll check in with your podcast in a year from now, and I bet you would have had them at that point.
Let's see.
More. Here's hoping.
Yeah. Yes.
Here's
manifesting.
Hoping. Yeah. Yes, manifest it. Okay. Well, I feel like that's a pretty good place to wrap up. Nice. Brooke and Eric, thank you so much for coming all the way. It's closer than I thought it was, but I will say all the way from Toronto. Yes. It was great. Our very first international guest. So I'm very excited.
Feel
for this.
So honored.
Yes. You should. I mean, we are honored to have you.
Yes. You'll always remember us.
Yeah.
First international.
Right?
So.
I know. Well, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's been really fun.